Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Watching this TV show Hidden Figures online a little bit yesterday. And Hidden Figures, of course, is in a lot of people's minds because Katherine Johnson died at the age of 101. She's the mathematician that broke the barriers at NASA. There is a 7-page obituary about her on the New York Times website. And when you go back and watch that movie, and a lot of you have, I'm getting a lot of text messages about it today, saying it's one of your favorite movies. You've watched it with your kids. A lot of the things in that film are pretty true. Not every single scene, but a lot of them. In fact, there's a sort of Rotten Tomatoes-ish website that scores the fact versus the fiction in films. And in this case, Hidden Figures scores 76% true. I don't know what Margot Lee Shetterly says about that, but we'll find out now. She is the author of Hidden Figures, the untold true story of four African-American women who helped launch our nation into space. This is about Katherine Johnson's legacy. Margot Lee, it's John Williams. You're on WGN in Chicago. How are you?
I'm well. Thanks so much for having me on your program.
I'm glad you were able to join us. I actually saw a video of you when you were interviewed about your book and this story at Northwestern. It was a really delightful conversation. What went through your mind when Katherine passed away?
Well, the first thing that was sorrow. I mean, this was for me and for the people who lived in Hampton, Virginia, and who knew her. She was a real person who lived in our neighborhood and who we'd known for many decades. So the first thought was one of loss at this amazing person, and obviously condolences for her family. And, you know, at the same time, it was another opportunity to celebrate her brilliance and this incredible light and her many achievements over the years. So, you know, many mixed feelings, both sorrow, but also a chance to celebrate a tremendous individual.
What made her special? Was she truly a brilliant mathematician, or was she a person who was pushing the boundaries of race and gender, and that's what made her exceptional?
Well, first of all, she was an exceptional mathematician. I mean, she distinguished herself among a group of exceptional people. I mean, you don't get to work for NASA if you're not, at the very least, extremely good at math. She happened to be a gifted mathematician. So that is just a baseline. The thing that made her, I guess, put herself in a position to realize that talent is that she was also someone who refused to take no for an answer. So over and over, she put herself in a position where she could do her best work. She, anytime there was an assignment that required more work, she raised her hand. When there was a meeting, she insisted that she be there. When there was an opportunity for example, doing the trajectory analysis for John Glenn's 1962 flight, she insisted that she was the right person. So it really was a combination of, you know, being an supremely talented mathematician, along with somebody who was highly confident in her abilities and very, very capable of going toe-to-toe with the best people in the business.
There's a couple of clips I want to play, actually, not from your book, obviously, but from the movie that is based on your writing and reporting, Hidden Figures. And they both are about that John Glenn calculation that you were talking about. I'm looking at my producer, Elif. Play cut two again. This is from Hidden Figures. John Glenn wants Katherine to check the coordinates.
You're the go, no go?
Yeah, in theory, sir.
We need to be past theory at this point.
We'll be able to calculate a go, no go with that information.
When exactly is that going to happen?
Katherine, have a go at it.
The go point for re-entry is 2,990 miles from where we want Colonel Glenn to land. If we assume that's the Bahamas, 544 miles per hour, 46.56 degrees, 2,990 miles. Okay, so that puts your landing zone at 5.0667 degrees north, 77.3333 degrees west, which is here. Give or take 20 square miles.
I like her numbers.
So there she is doing some of the calculations. She, as our guest said, wanted to be in the room where that happens. And then Glenn, when it was her or the computer, John Glenn said, I want her.
These landing coordinates don't match yesterday's.
The IBM just ran them.
Well, then the IBM's wrong yesterday.
The IBM's been spot on up to this point, John, but we'll run it again, see what it comes up with.
Let's get the girl to check the numbers.
The girl?
Yes, sir.
You mean Catherine?
Yes, sir. The smart one. I mean, she says they're good. I'm ready to go.
All right, we'll get into it.
Roger.
Sam, go find Catherine Goble.
Margaret, is there some truth in those scenes that we were listening to?
Absolutely. You know, I mean, obviously, things happen in a film in a much more dramatic and, interesting way than they do in real life. But those things are absolutely true. If you want to go to the NASA Technical Report server, you can actually download the report that Katherine Johnson is referring to in the movie. It's called Notes on Space Technology in the Movie. That's another one that she worked on. But it's Determination of Azimuth Angle at Burnout over Select Satellite Position. That's a mouthful. See her math. You can download it. And then the second point, John Glenn did say, get the girl to do it, referring to Katherine Johnson. Now, it didn't happen on the launch pad. I think we all know that NASA's a little bit more organized than that. But it did happen, and she was the one who went and double-checked the computer output.
It's interesting because we take computers for granted now. They didn't then. Her calculations disagreed with whatever they were entering into the IBM machine, and they were maybe garbage in, garbage out, getting numbers that didn't agree. And so when Glenn said, which do we pick, an IBM computer or this black woman, he said, get the girl. That sounds Hollywood. If there's a shred of truth to that, I'm so happy, you know?
Absolutely. He did say, get the girl to do it. And we got to remember, this was a time when we didn't take computers for granted. We didn't rely on them the way that we do now.
Right.
She was the computer.
And yet, that's not maybe the most famous scene of all. Let me play one more clip for you. You may know the scene I'm about to play, and we'll talk a little bit more about this character. Margot Lee Shetterly's book is Hidden Figures, the untold true story of four African-American women who helped launch our nation into space. We're talking about Katherine Johnson, who passed away at the age of 101. Katherine Johnson, that human computer that was profiled in the movie Hidden Figures, passed away at the age of 101. A woman who wrote a book about her was at Northwestern not that long ago, talking a little bit about it. Elif and I were watching it, and we're so, I think, transfixed by the story and her talking about it. We said, let's invite Margot Lee Shetterly into the show. She wrote Hidden Figures, and it's the story of those four women, particularly Katherine Johnson, and how they became so central to the Apollo mission. There's one scene, Margot, that people talk about a lot, and the scene is there's this work area where all of these men are doing the calculations and working on the Apollo project. And of course, Katherine Johnson, the black woman, is there. And every now and then she's taking breaks, leaving, and taking some time to get back. And the composite character played by Kevin Costner, her supervisor, asks her where she's going.
Where the hell have you been? Everywhere I look, you're not where I need you to be. It's not my imagination. Now, where the hell do you go every day?
To the bathroom, sir.
To the bathroom. To the damn bathroom. For 40 minutes a day? What are you doing there?
We're T-minus zero here. I put a lot of faith in you.
There's no bathroom for me here.
What do you mean there's no bathroom for you here?
There is no bathroom. There are no colored bathrooms in this building or any building outside the West Campus, which is half a mile away. Did you know that? I have to walk to Timbuktu just to relieve myself. And I can't use one of the handy bikes. Picture that, Mr. Harrison.
Then she goes on to yell at everybody in the room. Would you fact check that a little for us, Margot? What's the reality there?
Well, as you know, anytime you take a nonfiction book and you turn it into a movie, there are composite characters and conflated storylines and, you know, things like that. So this is actually one of those. In reality, it was Mary Jackson, who is another of the main characters in the movie, played by Janelle Monáe, who ran across campus looking for a bathroom and had this, you know, sort of confrontation, this sort of very similar conversation with the engineer that she worked with, who was played by, Krupczyk. His name is Kaczynski in real life, but it was Mary Jackson and her engineer who actually had that that particular scene with the bathroom.
So they really were, and I guess, of course they were, segregated. I was reading that you would think that under these circumstances they would get all of these people in the same room and work together. Were they segregated by how they worked then too?
Well, what happened is that from the very beginning, when the women started showing up, the black women in the 1940s, they were in a computing pool room, and that is depicted in the movie, the West Area Computing, which was all black. And in that particular building, there were quote unquote colored bathrooms. You know, they also used the colored area in the cafeteria. It was very much like the rest of the state of Virginia, and in fact, much of the south of the United States and many other places in the United States, and that it was racially segregated. As the women progress through their careers, they might be selected, as is also shown in the movie with Mary Jackson, to work for one specific group. And so those groups in different buildings did not necessarily have a set of segregated bathrooms, one for whites and one for blacks. So it sort of over time, the fact of the women mapping out, going out and becoming integrated into different groups sort of affected what their individual experience was.
Boy, you just shake your head. I mean, I know this happened a long time ago, and then again, it didn't happen that long ago at all.
Not that long ago, in the lifetimes of many, many people who are still alive.
Amen to that. And think about the illogic of it, right? If you're such a second-class citizen that you and I can't use the same water fountain, then why would I entrust John Glenn's life and the NASA program to you? But oh no, wait, you are valuable and you're brilliant and you're capable, and the Apollo mission is going to depend on your calculations, so wouldn't you let him sit with you in the lunchroom? But that just doesn't make any sense. Does it?
It doesn't make sense, and you know that was the fight over time to kind of inhabit the better angels of our nature, and so that was one of the fights that those women considered themselves part of.
That's a nice turn of the phrase. They were inhabiting the better angels of their nature. So expand on that a little bit, Margo. What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, I think that over time, we like to think that that exactly what you were saying, that we recognize people to be intrinsically competent when they're competent, talented when they're talented, and that we look beyond those superficial features. For many, many years, that was not the case. Over time, that is what began to happen. But it really was one number at a time. You know, these women worked very, very hard to show their colleagues that not only that they were themselves individually talented, but they came from a group of people where there was much talent. And that's what happened. This was a group of black women, even though these particular three women are given the star turn in the movie. There were many, many women, black women, women in general, working at NASA and at many other organizations, federal agencies, the military, other private industry, proving that women and specifically black women, women of color, women from all backgrounds, were more than up to the task. And, you know, that long struggle, these women were very much a part of that.
John, how did we never hear of her until the book and the movie? Shame on all of us people who did not give her credit where credit was due. Was she known in your neighborhood? Was she known in the black community? She burst onto the scene, if you will, as this character in the film late in her life was almost taken aback by all of the attention and the Presidential Medal of Freedom that she got. Can you just comment on her anonymity or her fame?
Well, people at NASA have known about her for some time. People in Hampton, Virginia, where I grew up, my dad happened to work at NASA. We knew about, you know, what she did. The people who worked with her obviously knew the details of what she did. But there were many people who, since the movie and the film has come out, would say, well, I knew Mrs. Johnson or Mrs. Jackson or Mrs. Vaughn, for that matter. I knew that they worked at NASA. I didn't know the details of what they were doing. I thought of her as, you know, the lady that sang next to me in the church choir, or the Girl Scout leader, or the one I saw at the PTA meeting. So we have to remember that these women had these very full and rich lives, and their identities weren't simply as the mathematician who calculated the trajectories, but, you know, they did many other things in their lives. And, you know, this was also a time when, particularly during World War II and the Cold War, the people at NASA and many other organizations did not talk about their work. Some of the work they did was classified. This is a highly competitive time between the United States and the Soviet Union. So they didn't exactly come home and tell everybody what they were doing at work. That was not something they did. And they were doing their job. So if you asked Mrs. Johnson or any of these other women for that matter, how did you feel like a trailblazer? Are you angry that people didn't recognize you before? You know, those kinds of questions. Most likely the response that you get is, I was doing my job.
But I do wonder how smooth they have since made the path for women or women of color in the field of mathematics, which sounds like an odd thing to even consider. But it's funny that I mentioned that. My friend Mark Baser does an interview show here in Chicago. And the other day, he interviewed a mathematician of color from the University of Chicago. And she said that on social media, she's not immune to pushback and ugliness. And Mark was kind of shocked. Why would a mathematician get any kind of feedback from anybody? And she says, because it's a field dominated by white men, many of whom are arrogant, or she intimated that. And a strident black, or she wasn't black, but a woman of color, she said, still has trouble fitting in the world of mathematics. Does that surprise you?
Well, I think we still have these persistent ideas that you know, if you imagine, ask your average person, what does a scientist look like? The image that comes up is probably someone that looks like Einstein, with the crazy hair, white guy, lab coat,
yeah,
glasses. And I think one of the reasons why this story and Mrs. Johnson and her colleagues have been so broadly embraced is because there are a lot of people out there who have been doing this, who are doing this, who are black or brown or female or whatever it is. You know, that there is a lot more diversity to math and science than is true in the popular perception. And I think a lot of people who are out there doing the math, so to speak, we're really excited to, you know, in the popular arena, see and celebrate someone whose experience really mirrored their own.
If you watch that movie tonight or have watched it recently, then do what I did. Make sure you get the book, Hidden Figures, based on Margot Lee Shetterly's nonfiction book of the same title. It's good reading. It's good storytelling. And Margot, it's a pleasure to visit with you. Thanks for your time and thanks for your research on all of this.
Thank you. And we're all thinking of Catherine's family at this time, and also just so grateful for everything that she brought to our country and to the world.
So well put. That's Margot Lee Shetterly, and the book is Hidden Figures.